All right, good morning, golfers. Welcome to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. Thank you for joining me on this April 13th, 2013, Masters weekend, moving day, in studio, co-owner of Pete's Golf Shop, Woody Lashin. Woody, how are you today?
I'm doing great, Anthony. Thanks for having me.
You got it. Yeah, it's the it's Masters weekend, first show of the year. We're on the first tee here, as they say.
I'm ready to go, baby.
I know. And it's finally weather. It's like, you know, the door to spring is finally open. Grab your clubs. Forge on through.
I always feel like when the Masters comes on, that golf season is starting. You know,
yep.
I mean, sometimes obviously we get weather, we can play a little earlier in April, but the Masters comes on, golf season. You know, I can remember as a kid, you know, watching the Masters and, okay, now I'm going to go play golf. It's, you know.
Yeah, I think you're 100% right, because even though the PGA Tour starts a little earlier and even has started earlier for years, for the north, it's the Northeast, you know, where we're not really. You know, it's nice to watch Hawaii, and it's, you know, it's nice to watch the, you know, that tournament of champions, but we're not playing.
Yeah, well, we're watching golf, right?
Exactly.
So we're watching golf, but we're not thinking about going to play because, you know, there's a foot of snow outside.
No, we're the guys still in our, you know, we're in our whatever we're wearing in the house, or pajamas or whatever. We're putting on carpet, you know. We're practicing our swings.
Absolutely,
you know,
swinging in the house.
You got the glass in the corner trying to make that putt into the jar or whatever.
To win the Masters
in our slippers. We have a great show today. We're going to be talking a whole bunch of stuff on the Masters, and we had a little swing into spring event and the PGA show, and our friend Mike Wolf had a question on Twitter, so we're going to get to that as well. But we're going to take a short break. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. All right, welcome back. Thank you for joining me on this April 13, 2013, moving day at the Masters. Woody, what were you doing when you were 14? Because I know you weren't playing in the Masters.
No, I was actually probably watching the Masters, though, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah.
You know, I started playing golf when I was 13. My golf story is, you know, I was 13 years old, and I grew up in a Garden City, nice area, and I was telling my dad, hey, Dad, this is the car you're going to buy me when I'm 17. And my dad said to me, well, the only car you're going to get when you're 17 is one you buy and insure yourself. So if you want to get a car, you better go get a job. And
sure.
So I walked down the block to Garden City Country Club and started caddying. And, you know, that's how I learned.
Not a bad place to start.
It was great. I tell you what, it was hard work. Caddying is hard work, but I got to learn the game. Back then, caddies could play on Mondays, so we started playing Monday nights.
Tell the little story about how you actually ended up picking up the bag to start, or your first loop. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, so, you know, I decided to go. Of course, you know, your kids, right? You get one of your buddies to
go
come.
With
so we
yeah.
go, and you have to sit there. I mean, you're not going to go get it right out. Back then, the caddy org was jammed. So we sat there, I think, 3 days. And finally, you know, the caddy master called us out. Okay, you two guys, you know, you're going to carry one bag each, learning. This other guy's going to carry two bags, and you'll learn from him. So, I don't know which end of the golf club to hold. So
right.
I put this old leather thing on my shoulder.
That weighs like 70 pounds.
I mean,
not the 4 pounds
my buddy,
that they weigh today.
Oh, man. No stand.
Right, exactly.
I could tell you some stories about stuffing golf bags, by the way, as a kid. I mean, wow.
Please, I understand. I once had a caddy try to make a Mexican melter or a tuna melt in my bag. I asked him, what was this? And he's like, is my tuna sandwich? I said, you're making tuna melts in my bag? I mean, but that's a whole other story. Go ahead.
So anyway, so, you know, it's a one caddy. Me and my buddy, we're just carrying a bag. On the third hole, the one guy was, you know, kind of gruff, whatever, and says something to my buddy. And my buddy takes the bag, puts it down, and he goes, I'm not doing this, and walks off. So that the other caddy says to me, well, you got to pick that up and carry it now. So now here, I never carried bags before. I'm 13 years old, and I got two bags. And I lug these things around for 18
holes. Two leather bags.
Two leather trunks. My shoulders are, I think they were bleeding. They're killing me.
Oh, my God.
And then the guys hand me, you know, I guess they handed me probably $16 or $20. I forget what it was. It was, you know, $8, $10 a bag back then. And I'm like, whoo, I'm coming back to do this again.
Exactly. despite the blood dripping down your shoulders.
Well, listen, you know, you have to pay a price for everything.
That's right. No, absolutely. And I think, you know, you mentioned before in the Masters and how it really gets us going, especially for us in the Northeast. It's a reminder of why we love the game. And
absolutely.
I think that's also part of it. It's not just that we can play the game or we're going to, like, physically able to go outside, that it's warm enough to play the game, but it reminds me why I love this game so much. I still remember the first time when I started and I was in the house and my mother said, "Where are you going?" And I said, I grabbed the keys and my mother said, "Where are you going?" I said, "I'm going to go to the driving range to play golf." And she was like, "What?" You know, because that was football, lacrosse, and, you know, I did all these sports. None of them had to do anything with golf. She said, "Okay." And, you know, and so there I am hitting ball after ball. Now the competitor in me is coming out and now I'm like, I can't stop. So I'm there hours and hours until I couldn't literally hold the club anymore. And I had this 7-iron that they gave me. And my hands are bleeding. I'm getting the blisters and I lost the club into the middle of the driving range because my hands were so weak from being there for 3 hours or whatever that I couldn't hold on to go. So now I'm the guy who has to stop the driving range, get the guy in the cart that everybody wants to hit. He's got to go out, get my 7-iron. And I went home and I was like, I told my parents, golf is my new sport. And that's how, you know, and I love it, you know. And I think when people love the game, they love everything about the game. It's not they just like making birdies or whatever. They like cleaning their clubs. They like getting new, you know, getting fitted for clubs. They love the, you know, as Tiger Woods says, the process. But the process of the game, and the game is a process that we love and enjoy.
There's no doubt about it. That's, I mean, listen, we all, I'm fortunate enough to work in the golf business, so I get to talk about it all day long. And I'm, you know, obviously a golfaholic, I call it. But for the average guy who's working at a desk all day long, this is his, you know, he's working at a desk and it's lunchtime and he's thinking, "Oh, man, I'm thinking about golf." It's, you know, it's what he's thinking about.
Sure.
Can you imagine at 14 years old what we were doing and this young guy, Kwan, is playing in the Masters and made the cut?
I mean, at 14, I thought it was cool that I was captain of the middle school football team. That's it. And to be walking around on, you know, hallowed ground with the likes of Ben Crenshaw and we don't have to go through it. We know who's there. It's just ridiculous.
I really think the amazing thing is he only hits it like 250.
Right, right.
You know, he's hitting fairy woods into all these holes. The other guy's hitting wedges.
Yep, yep.
And those greens are impossible. He's hitting fairy woods in there, and he made the cut.
Yeah, it was funny. Chambly on Golf Channel said, you know, what I saw from the first day highlights. And he's like, "What did I see?" I saw on 18, he had to take a head cover off. You know, going into 17, he had to take a head cover off. Going into 15, yeah, all these things. And it's right. You know, it was amazing. I think he did. It was a little, I did read a stat. He does average 250, but I think his driving average there was a little longer. It was like 260, 270, I guess, given the roll and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, you know, it's the playing yardage. But still, he's hitting hybrids into long, five woods into long. And to shoot 73, what? I mean, I don't care what he does. I mean, I'm so psyched, and we'll talk about the penalty in a minute. I'm so psyched that he's on the weekend. But after his 73, I don't care if he shot 90, 90, 90. Just to shoot 73, he's 14 years old. I mean, obviously, he has a little gumption about him. You know, walking up to Tiger, "I want to play a practice round with you," you know, and doing all that kind of stuff. I don't think I would have ever had, the nerve to do something like that.
Well, you know what? I think that's actually one of the cool things. You know when you were a kid and you went skiing, and you're like, "Okay, I'm going down the slope," but you had no fear.
Right, right.
Right? The young kids have no fear. So he had, you know, he had no fear going up to Tiger and saying, "Hey, Tiger, we play a practice round." And Tiger's going, "This young guy's 14 years old. Come on, let's go play."
Yeah, right.
Right? I mean, you know, 14 years old, you're playing here? I mean, look at, he was playing with Ben Crenshaw. How cool is that?
I mean, the legend.
I mean, you know, and Ben Crenshaw's, you know, you see on Thursday when they're walking up to 18 and Crenshaw kind of stopped.
Yes.
To let him walk up, took his hat off. I mean.
Class act.
That is just so, so cool.
What memories this kid will bring back home with him and
memory,
stories.
Memory of getting a one-shot penalty on 17.
I still don't get it. I get it. And we talked about it. Totally, he was totally in violation of the rule.
No doubt.
But six-hour round Is he the only one in violation of the rule? Was that the only group out of place? I don't know.
I guess my whole thing is that, you know, when was the last time you heard that someone got a penalty for slow play? I think I want to say I saw the 2010 PGA or something like that.
Right, right.
Okay. They should be giving those penalties out all the time.
And that's it. Go ahead.
If we're going to do that, well, let's give the – either we're going to give penalties out or we're not going to give penalties out. And, you know, this poor 14-year-old kid is the one who gets the penalty.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess in a way maybe it's a good thing for the juniors to go all out there and say, listen, you're going to have to play, you know. I mean, play on time. So when they're out and playing an AGA event and the officials out there going, hey, the young 14-year-old kid got one of the penalty in the Masters,
right,
you better pick it up or, you know.
Yeah, no, it's a good point.
But the
whole thing is dicey, to be honest with you. I agree. I just think if you're going to enforce it, it's not that they gave him the penalty. It's why aren't they giving out more of the penalties?
Right, exactly.
And that's really what it comes down to.
Exactly.
And it would be easier to swallow if it was, I don't want to say common ground to give them, you know, commonplace to be handing out penalties, but if they gave out penalties, you know.
Right, if it's a regular thing, it's kind of like in basketball. They give out fouls all the time.
Exactly. So it's not out of place. And when you don't call something, you've now magnified the one time you do call it.
Exactly.
And so now it's like, really, this is what we're doing?
Yeah.
So,
and I'm sure, listen, he was in violation of the rule.
Yeah. No one's arguing,
you know,
that.
And I got to tell you what. The most cool thing to me was the way he handled it.
Oh, tremendous.
Anthony, if that was you or me and we're playing in our first Masters.
Absolutely.
And they said to you, you know, you might miss the cut because of this. When they interviewed you, you'd be furious.
Of course. I mean, I'm half Sicilian. I have no choice but to be mad.
But the way he handled it, saying, you know, yeah, I respect the decision. Wow. I'm going, well, I'm a lot older than him, but I couldn't handle it.
No,
like that.
No, he was great. He was great. And, but, you know, and speaking of penalties, possible penalty, Tiger Woods drop, we were just talking about. I wish if there's a USGA member or is a rules official who's listening, call in, please, or hit us up on Twitter, because, you know, it just doesn't seem, we're not sure. We're talking about trying to get to the details.
Yeah.
He sort of maybe incriminated himself. We don't really know all the details because we don't really know what's reasonably close to where you last dropped.
Right. I mean,
tell us what happened.
I don't know the whole story. I know the rule is if you're going to drop from where you hit your last shot, you must drop reasonably close to the spot you hit from. Okay? You can't go, you know, he had three options there. He could go to the ball drop. He said, look, the ball drop, no good.
Right.
You can go take the pin and the point the ball across the water and go back as far as you want. That's no good.
Right.
So he goes back to his original spot. The rule is you have to be reasonably close. What is reasonably close? Now, it's a side hill lie. Could he drop it? And you know, I don't know what reasonably close is. Now, he said he went back 2 yards.
Right.
Did he really go back 2 yards? Did someone go out and look at the divots and see, you know, you obviously can't drop it in the same exact spot because you have to drop it in a divot.
Right.
Nobody drops a divot.
Right.
So
right.
What is reasonably close to the spot that, you know, you hit it from?
Right.
I'm sure we're going to find out today.
I'm sure of it, definitely. Just an interesting point. Yeah. And Tiger's not one to make mistakes, especially.
Well.
Well, okay, let me rephrase that for the record. Tiger is usually pretty meticulous on the golf course. Is that a good way to put it?
That's definitely a better way to put it.
All right, on that note, let's go to our first commercial break. We'll be back. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. All right, welcome back to On Par with Anthony Scorsia, here with Woody Lashin, co-owner of Pete's Golf Shop. Woody, we just had a swing into spring event at your place. Tell us a little bit about that real quick, because I know we got some tech questions we want to get to. Tell us a little bit about that event.
I mean, it was a cool little event. We had about 35 people or so come to the store Wednesday night. We call it Swing into Spring. It's kind of like a Masters preview event.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all people that haven't been to our store before that are golfers. And kind of neat. So they get a little bit of taste of what we do. We get a little tour of the store. They got either 10 minutes with me or 10 minutes with Pete or 10 minutes with Kirk. in the putter room or one of the fitting rooms.
Mm-hmm.
We show them a little bit what they do. You know, in 10 minutes, you can't really do very much.
Sure.
But you can show them a little bit about what they might have wrong with their driver or their iron or their putter. You know, just a little bit and say, hey, listen, we might be able to help you improve. Use this. A couple people, you know, right away we were able to say, look, this club is not even close. Now, where we have to go, I don't know.
Right. And it's not like you're trying to fix their swings.
This is just to get the equipment to
make their equipment more efficient for whatever swing they bring to the table.
Right. It's equipment only. We got Ben Hogan Wines.
Fantastic.
Which, by the way, where if you get a chance, folks, and you like a Cabernet, Ben Hogan Wine is fantastic.
I mean, it's the whole. I mean, this is why I'm watching my pick six in the Masters draw that I picked for our little thing to win a little Ben Hogan wines
we have a little Masters pool, so everyone came, got the chance to fill out their Masters pool, and the winner's going to get a bottle of Ben Hogan wine.
Yeah.
So you got taste Ben Hogan wines. You know, Ben Hogan Masters. How cool is that?
Awesome.
And it was a really cool event. I mean, thanks to you for coming, and we did a little Q&A, and I think people really enjoyed it.
I was amazed, and I continually am amazed that what I learned is that people have no idea about equipment fitting, and I am shocked by it. I really am. I mean, how many times have we heard, and it's not the first time I heard it that night, it's the first that I'm using the driver that I want in an outing, or I just picked this up, you know, from eBay or something, you know. And I don't know what it is about this that equipment fitting has a bad name or doesn't, or the misconception of it. Maybe it's not a bad name, but I think
it's a lot of problems, Anthony. I think, first of all, a lot of times people don't think that it's going to help.
Right.
Second of all, unfortunately, go for what they think is a fitting, and it's just a demo day.
Right.
And they're not having someone truly analyze their game.
Right.
So they go, well, I've got fit, and it didn't help me. There's so much to it. There's not very many guys that do true custom fitting.
Sure.
But it's getting better.
Yeah.
I will tell you, it's getting better. You know, Golf Digest has really been pushing the club fitting thing.
Mm-hmm.
The top 100 club fitters list.
Right. Congratulations on that. That's fantastic. Two years in a row.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah, it's
really
an awesome, cool. Feather in your cap. That's awesome.
So they're pushing it. I think that more and more people and more professionals are getting, more informed about fitting. I can tell you that the best players in our area in Long Island, whether it's professional or amateur, are seeking out getting the best equipment.
Sure.
And I always talk about is I can't help those guys very much.
Well, much.
Right. I mean, listen, if I can help a one handicap get a quarter shot off his game.
That's big.
That's big.
Sure.
But you could take a 20 handicap and make him a 15 handicap with the right clubs.
Right, exactly. I mean, the growth, the margin for improvement, obviously, is going to be much greater for the higher handicap.
The higher handicap can't adjust.
Exactly. That's a good point.
The handicap can adjust.
And I think that, and those are the people that really need it the most. You know, I mean, the quarter off a shot, sure, that's important if you're a competitive golfer. But going from a 20 handicap to a 15 handicap.
Oh, it's huge!
It's not even huge, and just it's a huge amount in the sense of enjoying the game. I mean, yeah, we're all going to have fun, and it doesn't matter what we shoot per se, but it is nice to see a few more pars up on the scorecard. Am I wrong?
There's no question about it, and I think quite honestly, as an industry, we need that higher handicap. We talk about the 20 handicap, but let's talk about the 40 handicap.
Right.
Okay? The 40 handicap says, oh, I'm out there. I'm hitting golf balls. My hands are hurting. You know, I can't break 120.
Right.
We need that person to stay in the game.
Yeah, absolutely.
We need them to stay in the game, for the game we all love, because we know if they do, they'll get better.
Exactly.
And if we can help them get better, that's going to help them stay in the game.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's no doubt about it. So you went to the PGA show. Tell us a little bit about the PGA show and maybe what it's like to as an industry person to be a part of it.
Okay. Well, so a quick overview. The PGA Merchandise Show is in January every year in Orlando, Florida at the Orlando Convention Center. And it's where every manufacturer goes to show their wares and show what they're doing. And they're obviously there trying to sell equipment. The reason why we go is that everyone in the industry goes there. So we get a chance. For us, our main goal is to meet with engineers.
Right.
I don't want to meet with marketing people. I want to meet with engineers. And since we've been doing this for so long, we get to go and spend time with these guys. For example, we spent time with Chris Voschel from Mizuno and Tom Stites from Nike, among a bunch of other engineers. But I'm going to highlight those two guys. You can't talk to these guys. You're not going to get – you can't pick up the phone. I can pick up a phone and call them now because I've made a relationship with them, but only because I've been going so many years and talking to them. And you really find out why engineering-wise that they do X, Y, and Z in their new club. Mm-hmm. Okay, why did Tom Stites and his new driver come up with this, and how did they do it? And it was pretty neat. Like, for example, their Hazel, they didn't design it themselves. They went to a mathematics company and said, listen, we need to have some of this kind of design. And the mathematics company came up with the formula for the Hazel to have open, close, and change the lofts.
That's amazing.
I mean, people don't realize how difficult that is to get a piece that's going to work the way they want it to work.
Sure. You brought up an interesting point. You know, marketing is different than engineering.
Oh, it's no question. Well, and that's one of the things that, you know, we talk about all the time. What you read in the golf magazine or what you see in an ad and what really happens, two different things.
Right.
You know, marketing, you know, we're always only interested in performance.
Sure. Absolutely. What did you learn from at the PGA show that you think is going to – I mean, that's a nice thing – I think about you, or it says a nice thing about you, is that you're going to this show because you're going to pick the brains of the engineers of the clubs that you're fitting people for, and you want to make them better, and you want to understand the clubs better. The more you understand the engineering behind the clubs, the better you can help fit golfers. What did you learn this year, or what have you learned in the last couple of years that you think?
Well, we're learning more and more and more about why they're moving the center of gravity is where they're moving,
mm-hmm.
What they are able to do with the materials, and you know why they're not doing certain things with different materials from a cost basis.
Right.
And it always helps us. You know, I just have a passion to try and learn more.
Definitely.
And every year you go and you go, okay, you know, one of the things we did, we long story short, we bought a machine called an EI curve machine a year ago, and it's a machine that measures the flex of the shaft, every inch of the shaft. In the past, it's only been available to major shaft manufacturers. It costs a fortune.
Right.
We got one. What we learned about shafts and what we thought we knew, we're like, well, this is why the shaft reacts this way. And we never understood. We just didn't use it because the manufacturer said it does this, and we couldn't get it to do that.
Okay.
So we go to True Temper engineers, and we talk to them, why did you do this? Did you change this EI curve this way?
Mm-hmm.
And boy, we got some really cool answers. They start talking about feel. And I'm going, an engineer talking about feel? And they're saying, yeah, if we change the flex of the shaft in the butt of the shaft and make it softer there, the shaft feels differently than if we change the flex of the shaft and the tip of the shaft.
Okay.
So we have to change the shaft. So let's say we have a Dynamic Gold, perfect example. You have an R300, an S300, and an X100.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? They all feel differently.
Sure.
Because they're designed differently. Where if you take a KB Tour, both great shafts, by the way.
Right, sure.
They feel more similar as you change the flex. That's because how the curve is designed.
Amazing.
And so if you don't go and sit down with these guys, you don't get understand why'd you do this.
Right.
And they'll tell you, well, we try to do this. This is what we're trying to accomplish.
Sure. And then you can relate that back to the customer, like myself, and say, this is why this feels this way.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And now the customer not only feels good about their purchase and that they're getting something good for them, and now they understand that the engineering behind why it's good for them.
Right, exactly.
You know,
exactly.
So that's the beauty of going and getting club fit, I think. And I just think it's, for me, it's a no-brainer. I mean, you know, being vertically challenged, if you will, I understand, you know, the idea, the benefits of getting things fit. And so I guess you could say I was predisposed to being the understanding of having clubs fit. There's no chance. I have a better chance of being 6 foot than the guy getting something off the rack that's going to fit exactly perfect. Or it could be tailor made. No pun intended. Yeah, right.
Exactly.
All right. We're going to take a short break. We'll come back. We'll wrap things up with Woody Lashin, co-owner of Pete's Golf. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. All right. Welcome back to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. Here with Woody Lashin, co-owner of Pete's Golf Shop. Woody, we got a question from my man Mike Wolf at Wham Golfs, and his question via Twitter was that having to do with the PGA Tour, it seems like a lot of guys have oversized putter grips. Talk a little bit about the technology behind that or the benefits of it on that.
Well, I would say to you the main reason why you see guys on tour doing that is that there's such a feel issue, and we get so tense sometimes under pressure. Mm-hmm. Well, these guys are under extreme pressure.
Sure.
And a lot of times the larger putter grip can allow us to hold that club a little bit lighter, mm-hmm. and therefore stroke it better. And stroke it better under this extremely pressurized situation when we tend to grab the putter.
Mm-hmm.
When you do a putter fitting, there's a lot of reasons why you would do that. In general, the large putter grip kind of works a little different than you think it would work. People think I rotate my hands a little less with the larger putter grip, and it may feel that way, but the reality is it's easier to rotate the face open or closed with the larger putter grip.
Okay.
And so when you do a putter fitting, you trying to fit someone's hands and fit someone's stroke and see what they're doing. But that feel under pressure. So I'll just take it back. Years ago, Roger Ginsburg was one of the best players in this area.
Sure.
And if no one was watching, he could make every single putt imaginable.
Right.
The minute someone was watching, he couldn't bring it back.
Really?
So having something in his hands that he could hold and relax his hands under pressure made the huge difference. And that's why you're seeing that on tour.
Mm-hmm.
The pressure is just crazy that they're under, and getting something that they can emotionally feel like, oh, I can not grab this as much, makes a big difference.
Sure. I mean,
especially when you have those 5-foot sliders that your living is being made on.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, hundreds of thousands and millions of dollars at stake. There's no doubt about it. Woody, can't thank you enough for being part of the first show. I appreciate you coming in, and thank you for being part of the On Par family. It's a honor to have you part of the family, and thanks for coming in today.
Oh, thanks for having me. It was great. I'm looking forward to being back on in a month. So.
Absolutely. All right, folks, that's it for round one of the On Par radio show. Thank you for joining me. Look forward to many more this season. Enjoy Masters weekend, folks, and more importantly, get out and play golf. And even more important, get fit for golf. Thanks.